This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca, good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel alongside Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this very busy Wednesday evening in the NHL. Joining us on the program coming up in mere minutes, we're going to speak to John Forsland, the play-by-play broadcaster on Fox Sports Carolinas, to talk about the Jets' acquisition of Jiří Tlusty earlier this afternoon. Also on the show, we're going to preview the Blues and the Jets game tomorrow evening with Kelly Chase, and we're going to speak to Arthur Staple of Newsday as the New York Islanders made a big contract signing, getting Nick Leddy under contract for the next 7 years. We're on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. Gentlemen, good evening to you both.
Yeah, good evening, boys. Very big day here in Winnipeg, but I got to say, why isn't anyone else wearing pink here?
You know what? I didn't know until about 9 a.m. today that it was anti-bullying day, and you're supposed to wear pink for anti-bullying day.
So are you saying that you like to bully?
No, I'm certainly not. Had I known that, I certainly would have worn pink. I wore pink yesterday, as it happened, to work, so I missed out on it today, which is unfortunate. Next year, Ezzy, give me a reminder, put it in your calendar, and I'll definitely wear pink alongside you. Let's go live to John Forsland. John, good evening. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Doing very well. Thanks very much for joining us on short notice this evening.
No problem.
Obviously brought you on to talk about the Jets' acquisition of Jiří Tlusty from the Carolina Hurricanes, a player who's been on the Hurricanes for the last three seasons since they acquired him from Toronto a number of years ago. You know, how would you describe Jiří Tlusty's game if you could sort of sum it up in a couple of sentences or so?
Well, he's a player that has top six skill, and, you know, that's why he was drafted, I believe, in the first round. Took him a while to get to that level at the National Hockey League level. And, you know, the thing about Jiří, I think, that a lot of people don't see is that he can play a 200-foot game, that he not only delivers top six skills, he can supplement your scoring, he's a finisher, but he's a better all-around player than maybe he's typecast into, if that makes any sense. So I think Paul knows that, and I think he knows that he's getting a guy that has a lot of versatility. Good left winger, can play the right side too. He's done that with the Hurricanes. And he's just a player, I think, that's going to fit the situation now with the Jets, given their injuries and given where they're at. It's a pretty good deal. Pretty good deal because, again, if you get him the puck, he can finish.
John, you mentioned his ability to play both wings, and you've seen him play, obviously, for since 2009-10 when he debuted with Carolina. Do you think he's a better left winger or right winger?
I think he's a better left winger, but he can play the right side. But the best season he had was the 48-game schedule, mm-hmm. You know, the lockout season, where he had 23 goals in that year, played the left side with Eric Staal and Alexander Semin. It was Semin's best go-around with the Hurricanes. It earned him the contract he's under right now. And it gave Jiří an opportunity to play in a first line and play consistently in that role, which he never had. I don't know if he's that. I do know that he can play in anybody's top six. On a great team, he's a top nine forward probably. But certainly he's a player that, again, with the right centerman in the right situation, can finish plays. He'll go to the areas where he needs to go to score. He's an intelligent player. He reads the play well. He can play in your power play. He has abundance of power play goals, I believe. Yeah. Just about half of his goals this year with the Hurricanes were on the power play. So he's going to help that. There's a lot of situations where you can use this guy to your advantage, especially fellas, when you get into crunch time, playoff-style hockey, you know, where it's a one-goal differential and you need that one-game-breaking situation, I think he can deliver that.
John, how much of an impact did Yuri Tulusti's relationship with Paul Maurice, the fact that Paul Maurice used to coach Yuri Tulusti, and the fact that he's familiar with Michael Frolik and Andrei Pavlik, obviously both being from the Czech Republic?
I know Andrei's his best friend, or one of his best friends. You know, only he can say who his best friend is, but I do know they have a great relationship that goes all the way back to youth hockey. They played together on the way up. They're close friends. They played international competition, you know, same teams with each other and all of that. So I know there's a great relationship there. As far as Michael Frolik, I'm not sure, but I'm sure there is, just based on the heritage. And I think Paul knows. Paul probably had something to do with him getting to Carolina in the first place, mm-hmm. because he knew, you know, what the Leafs had in that player, saw him a little bit there, and saw the skill. But I think Yuri has hardened up in a lot of different ways, which has made him a real good NHL player to get him to this point, which should help the Jets.
You're listening to NHL Midweek. Our guest is John Forslund. John is the Carolina Hurricanes play-by-play broadcaster on Fox Sports Carolina, is discussing the Jets' acquisition of Yuri Tulusti.
You know, John, when a player is acquired, generally the fans are going to be excited no matter who the player is. I just want to get back to you talking about his success in that, you know, lockout-shortened year, playing alongside Eric Staal and Alexander Semin. And I think Semin's struggles have been well-documented this year. Obviously, with the long-term deal he's on right now, it's difficult to move if the team, you know, is able to find a team to acquire him. But why, if those pieces are all still there, why didn't that trio continue to succeed post-lockout?
Yeah, it's a great question because, you know, why not, right? When you look at that lockout season, that line was responsible for almost 50% of the Hurricanes' scoring. Mm-hmm. So when you put that line against other lines, it's one of the best lines for that season in the league. So what happens next? The following season, Tulusti took a hit in training camp, got concussed, got behind the curve, and then tried to come back from that and never got out from underneath that injury, I don't believe. And then when he was finally healthy, Semin was having his issues. He tried the line didn't have success. The line was now circled by the other side and understood as, okay, here's something we have to watch. I think a lot of times you have to look at those abbreviated seasons and kind of take them with a grain of salt for what they are. It's 48 games. It's a real a short window, a small sample, if you will, of what it really is. Mm-hmm. Players are coming from different aspects of their training in a lockout year. Some play, some don't play. So there's a lot of variables that go into success or non-success in an abbreviated season. The next year is the real deal, and for whatever reason, all of that didn't come into place. And then you have Kirk Muller going through a year where the pressure started, and you know, you put those three back together, you find different combinations. It never found its way. Then Muller loses his job, and then this year, Tulusti got off to a really good start. Mm-hmm. And it looked like he was going to have a year that compared to the season where he had his success. But then again, he had a couple of roadblocks, an injury, and then I think the pressure of this whole situation got to him. I think he really wanted to get to a contract resolution with Carolina. But because of the comparables and kind of the world we're in now with the salaries, players are slotted in based on the comparables, and he earned a rate on a one-year deal based on what he had done, that I don't think the team could live with moving forward on a multi-year deal. And because of that, that was probably hard news for Yuri to understand, because he probably wanted to be part of this team moving forward. And once he realized that wasn't going to happen, I think it affected his play. So this change of scenery is going to do him good. Change of scenery is going to do him a lot of good, I think. And getting to Paul, because Paul certainly needs him in that lineup right now, mm-hmm. with the injuries you have with Wheeler and Matthew Perreault and so on, and other injuries prop up along the way. You need a player like this, and I think that's what he needs. He needs to feel wanted again, feel important, and put in every position and every situation to make him successful. And I think with the Jets, you'll get that. And then let his skill set take over. And like I said before, he's a finisher. He should be able to supplement the offense.
John, you know, you mentioned his finishing skills, and we know that he can certainly put the puck in the net. His, you know, he's able to get double digits of goals most every year in the NHL. How would you evaluate Jiří Tlusty on the defensive side of the game? Obviously, that's not what the Jets are going to rely on him for. But, you know, how did he acquit himself in his own zone?
Better than you think. This year with the Hurricanes, not as well. This year with the Hurricanes, be honest with you, he had his issues defensively. And again, I think a lot of it had to do with his psyche, and maybe he was lost at times. In previous years, very, very good. For a skilled player, European player, who we often typecast one way, good two-way player. Just had a conversation with John McClain in New Jersey, does television now for the Devils over the weekend, was an assistant coach under Mueller last year, and he was just commenting how they felt he was a really good 200-foot player. So I think it's there. I think he's fine. I think he understands the game. I think he's a smart player. And I just think he needs to get refocused. I think that's where it came off the tracks for him with the Hurricanes. I think more or less it was about the situation, the contract, and where he was headed. He's a sensitive guy. He's a great person. He's a really good person. And because of that, sometimes they get, you know, sensitive to these issues. And he wanted to be part of a solution with this team. It just didn't work out. When he realized that was going to happen, I think he came off the tracks a little bit. So there were some issues this way defensively with his game this year defensively, but I think he can do better that way in a new situation.
John, we'll let you go on this last question. The Hurricanes made a second trade today, and that's shipping defenseman Andre Sequeira, to the Los Angeles Kings in exchange for a first-round pick and a prospect defenseman by the name of Roland McEwen. You know, was that about as well as the Hurricanes could hope in terms of a return for Andre Sequeira?
Yeah, I kept hearing for weeks that Ronnie wanted a first-round pick and a player. Then no one said whether it was a prospect or an NHL player. If it's an NHL player, it's a hell of a deal. If it's a prospect, then I think it's a really good deal. And then there was a lot of people saying that he'll never get that for that guy. Now, I think because you've got teams like LA, Chicago, which seems to be very desperate now, both in the back end and at forward, and maybe a couple of other teams that kind of accelerated the process, maybe that's why Ron felt today was the right time to make the deal as opposed to waiting to Monday for the pressure point. You know, maybe he felt this is the best deal available. It looks like it's a great deal because, again, you're surrendering a 28-year-old defenseman who played very well last season, played okay this year, is the best available right now, will be overpaid in the free agent market. But you end up with a first-round pick, and depending on what the Kings do, it's either this year or next. If it's this year, you have two first-round picks in a very deep draft this season. Next year's draft is supposed to be deep again, so that's good even if that happens. And you get the prospect, which is a right-handed shooting defenseman who's 19 years old. So, you know, I think it's a good deal. I think it's a really good deal, and I think he has to do this. He being Ron Francis, he's got to make these moves when you have you know, guys whose contracts expire. You have to acquire as many assets as possible to make it a better situation in the big picture moving forward. And I think that's what the Hurricanes are all about right now.
John Forslund is the Carolina Hurricanes play-by-play broadcaster on Fox Sports Carolinas. John, appreciate your time this evening.
No problem, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks very much, John. Take care of yourself. Let's head to break. When we come back, more on the Jets' acquisition of Jiří Tlusty. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Hi, this is Drew Mindell. Some surprises are good, like a big comeback win. Some aren't, like internet overage charges. That's why MTS high-speed internet is unlimited, so you won't be caught off guard by surprise overage charges. Switch to MTS high-speed internet from only $20 a month for the first 3 months. Conditions apply. Call or visit your nearest MTS store for details.
You're listening to NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Again, I love it, Rod. Number one, Jiří Tlusty is a skilled player. You need goals, you need scoring, and I think for the Winnipeg Jets, he's a nice fit. The additional part of that is that Paul Maurice knows him very well and can put him in those situations, and the price that Kevin Cheveldayoff paid to get him, I think it's a brilliant move for the Winnipeg Jets.
Craig Button of TSN effusive in his praise of the Jets' acquisition of Jiří Tlusty. Welcome back to NHL Midweek. This segment brought to you by Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting custom-made mouth guard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center 204-487-2226 or online at LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. So, gentlemen, Jiří Tlusty, acquired by the Winnipeg Jets earlier this afternoon. Your thoughts on the move, Ezzy?
It wasn't unexpected that the Jets were going to go out and acquire someone. And what they gave up for Jiří Tlusty isn't much. Not a big fan of Jiří Tlusty. I wasn't as excited about the acquisition as most people. He's been a very streaky scorer throughout his career. In my opinion, he's a very one-dimensional player, not physical at all. Twice this year, he's gone six games without registering a point. He had a hat trick earlier in the season. You have some issues on the left side for the Winnipeg Jets. He's a rental player, and there's a good chance that the Jets don't re-sign him. There's always the chance that they do re-sign him, but in my opinion, I don't think Frolik or Tlusty are going to be signed. I don't think they'll be Jets next year. Again, that's not based on inside knowledge. That's just what I think. So they go out and acquire a guy who's had a couple of good years. But is this going to be the difference between the Jets, for example, winning in the first round? I'd say no. Did they need to go out and acquire him because they've got holes on the left side? Yes. So, I thought as far as what they gave up to get Tlusty, it was a good move. But, I would just take the acquisition with a grain of salt.
Well, I think what you want to do is you take a step back and you say, okay, let's look at this in the bigger picture. And what did the Jets do here? The Jets, it appears, probably didn't fully recognize what Sean Bergenheim, he was going to fetch something in their division to a team that they are ahead of.
Mm-hmm.
So Sean Bergenheim was traded yesterday for a third round pick, essentially, with a seventh round pick for a third round pick. Seemed like a guy the Jets would be interested in. You know, it's a pretty smart player, plays hard, all that kind of stuff, okay? You see what happens. Minnesota makes a trade in the division, as I mentioned, for a guy like Bergenheim. The Jets, were the Jets not willing to give a third-round pick for Sean Bergenheim? We don't know. So they don't make a move there, and I see the Jets reacting to that and being like, whoa, Bergenheim was moved. We need to make a move to react to that to ensure that we're not going to be left out to dry. So they call up Carolina. My guess was probably they were talking third-round pick before they had conversations. They had to add in the sixth-round pick, which can turn into a fifth-round pick. Something like that to get it done. I don't think that's an awful lot. You know, I think people are overvaluing draft picks in this day and age. A third and a sixth, and if they make the playoffs, a fifth, which right now the odds are they will make the playoffs, so a third and a fifth for a guy like this. Again, I don't think it's the biggest deal. They needed to make a move here. You're not trading a top 60 pick. People will be surprised to see the difference in the lists of teams, of draft lists of teams after the first 45 or 50 picks. A lot of them are all over the place. So what does he does? What does he do? He helps your team now. Obviously, as he mentioned, he's got an expiring contract, right? So he's a pending UFA. I don't know enough about Tlusty's game, but this is what I remember off the top of my head. You know, pretty good skill guy, can skate well, good stick handler, pretty good wrist shot. As he mentioned, he's not going to be going in and hitting everyone in sight. He can play with skill, and you assume he will drop in on the second line beside Mark Scheifele and Drew Stafford. And then Dustin Byfuglien probably move back to the back end. That's what I would guess based on the roster as it is right now, with Frolik staying where Wheeler is, and then Frolik dropping down to with Lowry when Wheeler comes back, they hope, on Sunday.
Sure.
So, let me continue. In terms of, does he play? Sure, skill plays better with skill. I do think if you take a step back from a different perspective, the Jets are becoming, for a team that everybody talks about being really tough to play against, big, strong, and intimidating,
less so now.
The moves they've made have made them less difficult to play against. And if you talk about Stafford and Myers and Tlusty, in the lineup now, I mean, you're not the same imposing team that you were with. Now, granted, I know you get smarter hockey sense-wise and different things. Don't get me wrong. But it's just a different look in terms of how they want to play. So I think overall it was a move that, first off, had to be made. You know, if Perreault comes back, which if you're a Jets fan, you're obviously you're hoping, anybody's hoping he comes back, and Wheeler were to come back, then you put Perreault on the second line with, say, Stafford and Scheifele. You have Wheeler on the top line, and then Frolik with Tulusti and Lowry. Then you've got a real nice top nine. Now, is that a top nine going to the Stanley Cup final? No, but there aren't that many good teams this year that I've really seen that would be that intimidating for the Jets to face. So I think it's a solid move. I don't love Jiří Tulusti as a player, but he's got good skill, and I thought it was a move that had to be done, and they gave up the pieces I thought they would give up. I mean, that's my take on it. It's a solid move.
I would agree with both of your comments. I mean, I like the move more because Jiří Tulusti is a guy, probably the guy on the trade market who can score.
He's got one goal in his last 13 games.
I know, but he's got 13 goals this year, and he's got a history of being a double-digit goal scorer. And very few of the other guys that have been talked about ad nauseum that are on the trade block have that ability to score. So I'll take a guy, what do the Jets need right now, especially without Matthew Perreault, especially without Blake Wheeler, is a guy who can score, a playmaker.
Yeah.
I mean, so I like the move, and
more a scorer than a playmaker.
Yeah, more a scorer than a playmaker. He doesn't have very many assists, but the guy can score in the NHL, and that's a hard attribute to find. And if the fact you're able to find him for a third round pick and a fifth round pick, I mean,
like Kevin Cheveldayoff, they have talks about the draft picks. He's got to calm down. I mean, I know what value the picks. These are the future. He's got to say all that stuff, and that's part of the whole MO of what the organization's doing, which every other organization is really doing too. Yeah. But it's a third and a fifth.
You're right. A third and a fifth.
Most hockey fans, hardcore hockey fans, couldn't list three third round picks, like a third round pick of any other team aside from their own.
Well, I mean, Steve Simmons on Twitter, I think, had a good point where he listed off the impactful fourth-round picks of both the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Detroit Red Wings in the last 25 years, and it was three per team. So in 25 years, there's been three fourth-round picks.
Percentages aren't high.
Yeah, so, you know, I'll trade a third and a fifth for a guy who's already a bona fide NHLer and take the risk that whomever I would have drafted, you know, with those selections that I no longer have, wouldn't turn into a bona fide NHLer.
I have no issue. The move had to be made, and they were gonna be trading picks other than second round pick. We knew that. I mean, this wasn't exactly a surprise to anybody that's been following the Winnipeg Jets. Kevin Cheveldayoff, A, needed to make a move, and B, was going to trade lower draft picks, and then C, talk about how trading draft picks is so difficult.
Right, but that's, I mean, you're right. The talking is always going to happen. Yeah. You know, to me, the key is, I mean, I like the fact that they get a guy who can score at the NHL level.
But there's one other thing we have to talk about, and as he mentioned when he asked, I think it was Ezzy, it might have been you, Drew, who's when asking John Forsen off the top of the show there, the Jets like to go with what's familiar.
Sure.
And that's Cheveldayoff trading with Chicago in the Oduya trade, where he used to work.
Mm-hmm.
That's
Cheveldayoff trade.
Acquiring Frolik from Chicago, acquiring Harrison, the ties with Maurice and Harrison, acquiring Tulusti, the ties with Maurice. So, I mean, aside from the Buffalo move, obviously that's the biggest move, don't get me wrong. But every other move has really been, for the most part, been with somebody him or Paul Maurice have close ties with.
Sure.
So that shouldn't be surprising either. Now, Tulusti played with him in Carolina. And in Toronto.
Yeah, with the Marlies and the Leafs in Toronto. Mm-hmm. I agree. That once the Harrison trade got made between the Jets and the Hurricanes, and that was, you know, back in December, January, whenever that was at that point in time, to me, it made a possibility of a Tulusti trade between the Jets and the Hurricanes more likely because of the familiarity between the two organizations that or not existed before, has obviously developed.
It's a seller's market now, too. If it's a seller's market, which people think it is, so far, you probably say that. It's a seller's market, and Tulusti can score, Ezzy. Then why were they not getting a second for him?
Well, because obviously, yeah, right. I mean, so obviously there's warts to his game, and I don't think, he's not a magic elixir, but I think this trade had to be made, one, because it improves their top nine, and, you know, they have the injury problems.
Because he can play top six or top nine.
Right. And two, and this is, we talked about it on Saturday show. I mean, Chevy talked about it during the press conference. It sends a signal to the room that they believe in this group.
Absolutely, you have to. I mean, you have to.
Right, and at the end of the day, you know, going back to what we were talking about before, since the All-Star break, the Jets are second last in goals against in the NHL. So if that doesn't improve, You know, an extra couple goals from Jiří Tlusty on the third line isn't going to matter much. The Jets have to play better defensively. They didn't play well last night. They got the win last night. If you watch that game, they could have easily lost that game. Mm-hmm. I mean, a couple posts, Jamie Benn hit the post, Derek McKenzie hit the post.
Curtis McKenzie,
yeah. Pardon me, didn't play well. So they got to play better defensively.
And Izzy makes a great point there. They have to play better defensively, and whatever move they made was going to be an upgrade to the top nine. Because if you watch last night's game on TV or in person, mm-hmm. and you saw who was in the top nine, you know that whoever they brought in, waivers or not, to be honest, was going to be an upgrade, with due respect to
due
the
respect
guys who were there.
To Gagliardi and Thorburn. And especially Gagliardi, because that's really been their biggest hole, is that left side third line.
That has been. I mean, that's not Gagliardi's fault. And the fact that Thorburn's been playing on the third line for almost all year is not his fault either.
Right. But you're right. They needed to upgrade it, and they've done it in Jiří Tlusty. We'll see him next in action coming up tomorrow when the St. Louis Blues visit the Winnipeg Jets for a key Central Division and another key playoff matchup.
And if the Jets, as he's pointed, if the Jets play like they did last night against St. Louis, an angry St. Louis team after playing against Montreal last night, mm-hmm. it's going to be a long night.
You're right. Let's talk about that game. We'll head to break and we bring in Kelly Chase from the Blues Radio Network. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
6:30 in the evening. Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve. Our website with latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. This segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, he's the St. Louis Blues color analyst, Kelly Chase. Kelly, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hi, bud. How are you?
Doing very well. How about yourself?
I'm good, thanks.
That's good. Kelly obviously brought you on to talk about tomorrow evening's Jets-Blues game. You haven't seen the Blues much since early this season, but we're going to see them four times in the next 20 games to wrap up the Jets' regular season schedule. Blues have been struggling a little bit the last couple weeks, losing two games in a row. Ken Hitchcock sort of took a piece out of the team after last night's effort. You know, anything more serious to the Blues' struggles right now, or is it just a simple factor that's sort of going through the motions until the playoffs finally kick in?
You know, I don't know. It's weird. It's kind of a different dynamic than what we're accustomed to seeing out of the group. Usually, if the work's been put in, even if they lose, it's almost like, you see that they take a bite out of somebody one way or the other. You know, it seems like they, somehow, some way, I feel like you left the game knowing you've been in one, and that's not been the case here, which is very unusual for this group. And I think that's what I think Hitch was probably referring to is that, you know, he's not so concerned with the losses as he is with the way that they're losing. And I think that's the one thing that probably is most surprising.
Kelly, the Blues have struggled a little bit here, but they're firmly entrenched in a playoff spot. They'll end up finishing probably second or third in the Central Division. With about 5 days to go before the trade deadline and knowing that they don't have a first-round pick coming up, what do you think that Doug Armstrong's going to do here before the trade deadline, if anything?
Well, I would, you know what, if there's a need, I think there would be a depth third-line type of a winger kind of guy and a defenseman, if that's what they were going to do. But they're looking for the same things that everyone else was looking for, and they don't want to give up a whole bunch to get them. So there's just not a, you know, it's hard to make a trade. It's hard to make a deal now with the cap and the way it is now. And so I think that Doug would be pretty confident with his group going into the playoffs. Although Army every year has done something, whether it was Bo Meester to try and bolster the defense and then getting him signed, to last year getting Miller and Ott. And He's been fantastic at pulling off deals. I mean, Leopold and Bomeister were huge additions late, and normally Army is a week before the deadline. He doesn't wait to get in the race. So that would tell you the guys that are available are asking prices a little high right now. He's very patient. I call him stealth all the time. You know, he's under the radar a little bit with stuff, and he's done a fantastic job, I think. You know, I mean, it took some courage to trade the first pick overall in Eric Johnson. I mean, and, you know, he did that, and it made us better because for the simple fact that, you know, at that point, we needed to get some more hockey players that were capable of playing in the league, and that's what he did. And so, you know, I think you start making some deals where you start getting guys that you can depend on a little bit on a day-to-day basis. It strengthens the organization. And Alex Steen and, you know, and Koliakovo for Stempniak. You know, there's some moves made that made a huge difference in this organization.
Kelly, you know, you mentioned Eric Johnson. Of course, in that trade was Kevin Shattenkirk, who's a huge part of the Blues the past few seasons. Of course, this season having a great year, especially points-wise. How much have the Blues missed him in terms of help with their transition game, amongst other things, and any word as to when they can hopefully have him back in the lineup?
Well, there's not really a word in a time frame right now, but it's one of the biggest differences, and it hasn't been so much a transition game because I think everybody's kind of on the same page. And, you know, there's a second and almost a third wave of players coming at you. But I think where you really notice the difference is when you look and you see how these guys are playing, most importantly, on the power play. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, he just makes such a difference. He's got great vision. He's patient with the puck. He utilizes his teammates and the guys around him. You know, he's not afraid to shoot. He's not one of those guys that, because, you know, there's someone he thinks that's a little bit higher veteran-wise or whatever in the stature standpoint that he's going to have to overpass. He's just a very confident young man, and I think that's where the biggest gap is and the biggest hole for the Blues right now.
Kelly, last night's game, you know, against the Habs, obviously Ken Hitchcock didn't like the performance and probably didn't like the past few, but Habs are a really fast team and one of the fastest teams in the league. Is that a concern at all for Ken Hitchcock, how the Blues are able to adapt against teams that may be a little bit faster than they are?
You know, I don't look at it I think that the Blues are, you know, he doesn't like to say that, you know, that they got a quick team, but I think it comes down to your transition game. If you're going to go back and forth like a, you know, like you're conducting in the choir, go D to D to D to D until you're, you know, D to D to them, that's what happens, instead of just, you know, Blues have a transition game that's as good as anyone in the league when they're going. But it's like any team, if you stand still and wait for the play, you're usually on your heels. If you're taking off and going and on your toes, that's when you're most effective. So for me, and I watch this team daily, I think that, you know, it just comes down to the, like you said, the spirit of the team is somewhat tainted right now for whatever reason. And I don't know why. It's the same group that got points in, I think, 15, all but one of 15 games, and yet couldn't make up any ground on Nashville. And I think when they finally lost the game, I think, you know, they were like, well, you know, here we are losing ground and we just rattled off points out of, you know, 14 to 15 or whatever it was. And I think that they, you know, there's maybe a little content there, whereas last year they pushed right to the end to get the President's Trophy and with seven games to go, I think they lost the last seven or six or seven, and they had 11 guys that were regulars that weren't in the lineup or injured. So I think, you know, I'm hoping that that's probably why there's some reservations in these dog days in January and February.
You're listening to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. Our guest is Kelly Chase, Blues radio analyst.
Kelly, the last couple of games obviously haven't gone the St. Louis Blues way. Brian Elliott and Jake Allen both not having particularly good games. I guess a two-part question: who do you think gets the start versus the Winnipeg Jets tomorrow night? And how concerned are you, and how concerned is Ken Hitchcock with the goaltending situation down the stretch?
Well, I don't have anything to be concerned about. I work on the radio and TV.
Kelly, what if they ask you to strap the pads on?
I'm out of the business, bud. So no, it's pretty easy for me. And as far as Ken Hitchcock, like I said, I think that they're, you know, that they're, you know, I think he's concerned. I think he, you know, he's worried about his team like all coaches do. And certainly when they're not playing at the standard or the expectations that they have of themselves, that's even more of a growing concern. So if I was saying, you know, that, you know, when looking at this team and saying, this is what I would decide that I wanted to, how I wanted to approach the team or how I wanted to approach trying to rectify some of the, you know, the issues on it, I think I, you know, you go to the older guys and say, hey, listen, are we going to be all right with this group? Are we going to be, you know, are you guys need to manage it a little bit inside internally? And I think, you know, for me, that's where it would start for me. I would certainly make sure that, you know, it's managed from the inside first, and then, you know, the rest generally takes care of itself. And also, you know, I think veteran players too, they do have a real way of, you know, figuring stuff out. They have a way of, you know, calming things down sometimes too when possibly coaches are maybe, you know, a little uptight. They can recognize it too. If you take a guy like Alex Steen or, you know, a guy like, you know, even Steve Ott, those are the leaders on the team. Barrett Jackman, they're pretty, they have a calming demeanor about them in the first place. So they really don't get too worried about, you know, the stuff. And if you can recognize the problem on those guys, then you know that, you know, that you've got issues. So that to me is a telltale sign right there.
Kelly, you look at, you know, talking earlier about where the Blues are and 9 points behind Nashville and 3 points ahead of Chicago. Obviously, the news today, Patrick Kane's out for, you know, maybe even 3 months. That's got to, you know, that's a St. Louis team that's had trouble getting through Chicago. Is there chatter in the room about that in terms of a possible even greater opportunity than there was before to get by Chicago? Not that they didn't believe they could, but then get through this division and possibly farther?
Well, I think, you know, I think the media talks about it more than the players actually do. Mm-hmm. It's funny because a couple of the guys today on the plane didn't even know about it. And so,
really?
And you know, they you know, they knew he got hurt, but they didn't know the length or hear anything about it. So, guys, I got to tell you, and I know you guys hate to hear this, but you're in Canada, you're in a market, it's our culture. We're Canadians, we grew up in this culture. But there's one reporter at the rink in St. Louis some days, okay? So it's not quite as, you know, it's not quite as big a deal as and talked about as much in the U.S. and which at times is unfortunate because I think sometimes you get comfortable not having to play with pressure. And to me, you know, I think pressure's good for you, but certainly not as much made of it. The thing from now wearing my media hat, if I was a guy, I'd be sitting back going, if they aren't indeed hurt and Patrick Kane is such a valuable part of that team, if he is indeed hurt the way they say he's hurt, you know, this gives, you got to remember, this gives the Chicago Blackhawks a few days here to make a mm-hmm. change and try mm-hmm. and fill a void. So, I think, and don't kid yourself, they will. I mean, they recognize that there's a window to win with a group of guys. And the window is now. And that's much like I look at the LA Kings. I mean, I don't think that there's any secret there either. I think if you're looking at the LA Kings, you're going, if there's a team that'll take on a hefty salary of a guy that may come available, that they think that they can get in the lineup to make a difference while this window of opportunity is there, they're going to do it. Whether it's, you know, I'm just throwing a name out there, but whether it's a Kessel type of a player or a guy that's got a lengthy contract, but because you've seen them do it already. They've done it with Carter and Richards. They went and turned around and they did it with Gabrick, and both times they've been successful. So in their mind, their formula for success is just exactly that. Make sure at the deadline we haven't gone out and, you know, kicked ourselves in the rear end because we didn't do everything we could to make sure our team was bolstered for the playoff run.
Kelly, final question, a little bit off topic. Earlier this month, Gordie Howe was honored in Saskatchewan. Of course, you're a Saskatchewan boy. Not only are you a Saskatchewan boy, you obviously played many games in the NHL, but you emceed that event. Can you talk about that experience from your perspective?
Well, it's probably, I said at the event that I know that I understand Sportsnet's going to do a whole feature on it, on the event, and I said it's a little like Stompin' Tom Connor hosting the Beatles. I mean, I hosted the event, and it really was, like, I was so honored. And you know the thing that really was the best part of it, and I tell this story at the event, and I, you know, about when I went to camp my first time, and the short version is that I met Gordie Howe in the airport, and I was going the same place he was, and it took me all I had in me to go and speak to him and say, you know, I just want to thank you for everything you've done for the city of Saskatoon as a Saskatchewan kid. You know, I just want you to know that it means a lot. And he was so nice to me. And Gretz always says this. He says, you know, he goes, it's unbelievable, but sometimes when you meet your hero, they're not as big as you think they're going to be. They're not as nice as you think they're going to be. He said, and Gordie Howe was everything. He was every bit of all of that. He was bigger, nicer, a better man. I mean, it was just to talk to him. Well, our flights got canceled, and we ended up at the same hotel in the same room, because when we went up to the counter, the lady said, are you two together? And Gordie said, yes, we are.
Oh, wow.
She gave us one coupon, and I roomed with Gordie Howe as a kid, you know, an 18-year-old going to camp in Hartford, and he was part of the organization. And you know what? At the end, I ended up in a few fights with some veterans, and one of the things that I did was I was embarrassed by one of them, and I went out and fought him, and I really, you know, it was during an intermission, so it was quite evident that I was trying to get back at him, and I made an impression, certainly, but Gordie told me, make sure they know who you are, no matter what. You got to go home, and because nobody drafted you, so nobody went to bat for you, so make sure they know who you are. And I said, you know what, I was thinking of that on the bench, and I was so nervous leaving the rink that day, that all these veteran players were going to just, you know, clobber me when I got on this bus to go to Avon Old Farms, and this big old arm come around me. It was Gordie Howe. And right in front of the bus, he made sure everybody knew I was his guy. And I can tell you, he put his arm around me. He said, hey, kid, hey, freaking know who you are now. And so the statement was at the event was that I just wanted him to know. And I'd read in his book, he came to Winnipeg as a 15-year-old kid. And they were trying to make Gordie Howe into a defenseman. And when they did that, he was completely caught off guard. He was uncomfortable at camp in Winnipeg. It was Rangers training camp. And he ended up going back to Saskatoon. And he said, I wish I could go back someday. And I wish I could go back and put my arm around a 15-year-old Gordie Howe and just say, hey, everything's going to be all right. I said, Mr. Howe, I just want you to know that you've put your arm around more 15-year-olds and taken care of more people. And it's such an honor. And as I'm looking at him to do it, Gordy's got tears running down his face, and he gives me the thumbs up. I'm going to start crying. I can see he's got tears. So I look over, Bobby Hall's got tears running down his face. I turn around because it's the center stage and realize the camera's on him and everybody's crying. And I'm like, oh, no, this is going to go south in a hurry. So it was probably the best event that I've ever been. I was so honored to do it. So I appreciate you asking, and I look forward to this special that they're doing.
That's a great story, Kelly. Thanks very much for sharing that, and thanks very much for your time this evening for joining us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey, listen, I got to get back. I'm at Big Adventure. You know where Big Adventure is in Winnipeg?
Yeah, it's Alex Steen's place, right?
That's right. I'm out here at Steiner's place checking it out. So I haven't been to the Big Adventure. The only thing they got to do is start serving Bud Light here. And
yeah, tell them to get it on tap, and then I think you got a deal there. Thanks very much, Kelly.
See you, boys.
Take care. Let's head to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
10 minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to NHL Midweek. In case you missed any of that interview with Kelly Chase, we're going to get it thrown up online. You can check it out, legalcurve.com, TSN1290.ca, iTunes as well. That was a terrific story he just told there at the end about emceeing the Gordie Howe tribute dinner that happened last month or earlier this month, and that story about being, you know, a young rookie trying to make his way in the NHL. That's a terrific story. We'll get that up online so you can hear it right away. Jets and the Blues tomorrow night, first of four meetings. We're going to see a lot of these two teams over the next 20 games. So a quarter of the, one-fifth of the Jets' remaining games are against the St. Louis Blues.
20%, Drew.
20%. One-fifth. That's right.
Man, hold on, did you guys get that from the enhanced stats section of NHL.com, or did you just do that in your heads?
I like your enhanced stats section from last night's game where you said, what was it, all three assists in the Wild Oilers game were from guys named Jordan?
Yeah, two from Eberle and one from Schrader.
Yeah, that's good advanced stats. I like that. So Jets and the Blues tomorrow night. Haven't seen this team, I think, really for a number of months now. The Blues are scuffling. The Jets might get a bit of an infusion of energy with the acquisition of Tlusti. What's your keys to the game for tomorrow night?
Well, I mean, there's a couple of keys, Drew. The Blues might be scuffling, but they're really good.
Mm-hmm. And the Montreal's a good team.
And Montreal's a good team also. So one of the keys to the game, Drew, is being able to support the puck down low defensively. This goes to Ezzie's point in the early part of the show. The Blues are big. They're not particularly fast, but Kelly Chase talks about their quickness and the decisions they make. And Ken Hitchcock has them programmed not to make a lot of mistakes and do the right thing, quote unquote. His quote was about playing the right way in this day and age.
Yeah.
That means putting the puck in. You know, it's not the most exciting style, but it wins.
Can I read the entire quote?
Sure.
What we're doing is not paying any respect to checking. This is Ken Hitchcock per the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. We're not paying any respect to defense, to managing the puck, to managing the proper way to play. I don't care what the shots on goal are. When you give up as many odd man rushes as we gave up in the last two games, we're showing no respect for what matters in the National Hockey League at this time.
Okay, Richie, before you go on here, I love Ken Hitchcock.
Yeah.
He's one, I know you like him too.
I do.
And this goes, Ken Hitchcock comes from the Western Hockey League.
He's a miserable bugger.
But Richie, he comes from riding the buses in the Western Hockey League. If you go back to those teams, the 99 Dallas Stars, he likes a team that obviously plays well defensively, but finishes their checks, gets in on the forecheck. He does not like lazy hockey. And I think what he's talking about here is, and Richie made a really good point, the St. Louis Blues, obviously, they're without Kevin Shattenkirk, but Ken Hitchcock wants this team working it down low, and that's why that Backes-Steen-Oshie line is so good, because when they get behind the goal line there, you know, these guys can not only can put the puck in the net, but, you know, these guys can cause headaches in the own zone because they're big, and Oshie's not the biggest guy, but, you know, Oshie's
he's built like a little spark plug. Yeah.
So, I mean, Hitchcock wants this team getting into that playoff mindset. He's not a guy. You think Ken Hitchcock's a guy that's looking at the advanced stats after the game? I don't think so.
Well, you know, Ezzie, I don't know if he is or if he isn't, but he wants to get the message across, as he did last night, to play a certain style. And that goes, you know, what we were talking about before is how do you play, Ezzie, in the defensive zone? The Jets, how do they play in the defensive zone? Okay, so if say Tulsi plays tomorrow, Bufflin moves back to the back end.
Would you do that, by the way? It doesn't really solve your problem when it comes to your third line if you do that.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't solve your problem with the third line because Wheeler's out right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, you probably would.
Well, you do have Eric O'Dell, too. So.
Yeah, I mean.
Well, I'm just saying.
That's not going to help you defensively.
I'm just saying
either.
if they want to move Bufflin back to defense, you have the option of not only putting Tlusti in the lineup, but also putting O'Dell in the lineup.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to go, if you want to do quickly on the Jets lines there.
Yeah, Ladd, Little, Frolik will stay together.
Right, and you're going to put, say, Stafford, Scheifele, and Tlusti, and then, yeah, you'd probably even, I don't know if you can do these lines, but yeah, Bufflin probably up top until Wheeler comes back makes sense. I probably would lean towards that, and then once Wheeler comes back, you put Bufflin on the back end. But how do you defend against the Blues? So the Blues are big, right? And they're able to cycle the puck, and they're able to control the boards a lot. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Tobias Enstrom, tough game for him. Like, these are the games that Enstrom, and I like Tobias Enstrom. I think he gets unfairly criticized often. I mean, he has his flaws, but he does a lot of good things. He's going to get worked over tomorrow's game. And how does the center support? You know, Brian Little's a good, smart defensive player, but not the biggest guy. Mark Scheifele's not the strongest guy. Adam Lowry can play that kind of game. But the wingers as well, you know, helping down low. And now you're getting, you know, not that big on the wings necessarily. So you're going to have to be able to support defensively against a Blues team that's going to come in waves. So that's going to be a big thing. Another thing is mistakes, and it sounds so easy, but this team takes advantage of stupid hockey. And that's what Ken Hitchcock is talking about, is stupid hockey. That's what he really is alluding to.
Yeah.
And
stupid
the Jets,
hockey where
the Jets
is cheating a little bit.
Yeah, the Jets play like they did last night, kind of sloppy, they're not physical, all that stuff. they're going to be in trouble. And the Jets have to play a more physical style. Again, this move doesn't necessarily fit into that, but they have to play a more physical style tomorrow, because if they don't, like, Dallas wasn't going to do anything physically to the Jets, but LA and St. Louis will take over the game.
Well, St. Louis,
and that's in the middle of the ice and on the boards. Mm-hmm. And if you don't play that kind of style, you are going to be in trouble and match them, because, you know, Toronto on Saturday talked about coming out. That was part of that kind of narrative of that game, you know, at least on Hockey Night in Canada. You know, the Leafs knowing they were going to be aggressive and coming out and matching that. Well, the Blues don't have to worry about the motivation of matching that. They will always be there. I think it's questions. Can the Jets get up to where the Blues are at that point?
Absolutely, Drew. And they have to be sharper. That's
Richard.
But he's talking to you.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I was...
Go on.
Well, I mean, you're the host, so yeah, I defer to you.
I appreciate that.
It was a good point by Richie. And the Jets have had trouble against both of these teams over the years.
The Jets and the Kings, you're saying?
Kings and the Blues.
The Kings and the Blues,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that the Jets can't win these two games. But to me, I mean, these are I like Anaheim, and I think Anaheim, you guys know I picked Anaheim before the season started.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you can throw that all out the window now that you have Nashville and the emergence of Nashville and Winnipeg is playing better. But the point being that in this situation, it's the depth that kills you. And if you look at their third line there, and I realize the lines change a little bit, but Dmitry Jaskin, Vladimir Tarasenko, Yori Lehterä, that might be a first line on some teams, and I realize that sometimes Tarasenko can play on the second line, and Oshie.
He's averaging a point a game, but Tarasenko can be a top three on any team.
Richie, that's when you got to think, okay, and again, not to pick on Adam Party and Jay Harrison, but if they roll out that third line and they get that matchup,
great point. And also, I think it speaks to needing to have Buffon up front tomorrow. But
up front or on the back end?
That's where I go both ways, because Ezzie makes the point of what do you do with that third pairing, and are they going to have trouble against the third line against St. Louis? Absolutely. But what do you do with the third line of the Jets, Adam Lowry and the guys he's playing with yesterday, going up against a Schwartz line, Steen line, or Backus line? I mean, pick your poison. So I would probably load up on the top four big-time minutes in that game, and then I would play Bufflin up front to match up against the Blues' top nine. And then if you can get Wheeler back for Sunday, then you drop Bufflin back to be able to play against LA's four lines. Because,
yeah,
I mean, St. Louis plays a four-line game. Last night's ice time, you look at, 9-10 minutes for their fourth line. LA is similar. So I think because you can't play, I mean, you can't go into tomorrow's game playing Adam Lowry, Chris Thorburn, and TJ Gagliardi against the Blues' third line. It's going to have trouble. So you have to be able to put, I think, Bufflin up there to add some depth, and then load up on your top and give the third pairing, like they were doing yesterday, some offensive zone faceoffs to buffer him a bit.
Shield them. You get last change and everything.
Yeah, so you're going to have to do that. But you're going to have some bad matchups for sure. But
pick your poison.
Yeah, yeah. I think Richie's right. I agree. I think you're going to see Bufflin probably. And again, we're just guessing, because Tolusti's not even in Winnipeg right now.
No.
We're told that he's not going to be at the game day practice either. Game day skate, pardon me. So he should be in the lineup tomorrow. But I agree with Richie. I think they wait till Blake Wheeler comes back, leave Bufflin up at forward. Then when Wheeler comes back, hopefully Sunday against LA, then you move Bufflin back to defense.
And if you were playing against a different team over the next two games, when Wheeler's expected to be out one, maybe two.
Mm-hmm.
He's out last night, but two, maybe three.
Sure.
Then that's okay. Dallas, different teams like that. Yeah. And again, based on the needs. And they didn't
Dallas
have Toulouse last
physical
night.
Team.
And the depth. I mean, they have some guys who can play on their bottom end. But we're not talking about playing against Arizona or Edmonton, who have, kind of AHLS fourth lines. We're talking about teams. Arguably, the next two teams are arguably the best two teams in the Western Conference.
Yeah, and
especially with Patrick Kane out of the lineup.
Yeah,
yeah. I know we got to go quickly to break, but I think when you're talking about forward depth, I think St. Louis might have the best forward depth, definitely top three in the NHL. They can roll, and even on that fourth line with Gotch, hometown boy Ryan Reeves, and Steve Ott, it's a good team.
Mm-hmm. Let's head to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. When we come back, Arthur Staple from Newsday is going to join us.
You're listening to NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca, brought to you by MTS.
One hour down, one hour to go. Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by Royal Sports. Since 1974, Royal Sports has been Winnipeg's number one hockey shop, plus so much more, like soccer to snowboards. For locations, hours, and more, check them out online at royalsports.me.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from Newsday Newspaper in Long Island, Arthur Staple. Arthur, good evening, and thanks for joining us.
Always good to be here, fellas.
Now, Arthur, when our producer called you about 30 minutes ago, were you as confused as to why he was calling you as we were as to why he was calling you?
I always want to be as prepared as possible for you guys, so maybe that's a little good little alert.
There we go. Keep you on your toes, right?
Remus, you threw you right under the bus.
Anyways, Arthur, brought you on to talk about the Islanders signing Nick Leddy to a big contract extension, 7 years, $38.5 million extension, average annual value is $5.5 million. What were your initial thoughts when you heard that the deal was going down yesterday?
I think it was not expected right away, but certainly something that the Islanders wanted to do, and I think from talking occasionally to Neil Sheehy, Nick Leddy's agent, it was something that that Nick was interested in doing as well. I thought maybe it would be a little bit more time, that the priority more was dealing with Johnny Boychuk, who's going to be unrestricted in July, and obviously Nick Leddy being restricted, he was going to still be a part of the plan going forward, but they obviously came to an agreement that both sides liked, and I think the Islanders have been more than pleased with him since they acquired him from the Hawks right before the season began. I think he's given them throughout the season, not just the skating ability and a little bit of offense, but his durability. You know, he's got the longest Ironman streak. I think one of the longest ones in the league right now. I think over 300 games, and I think he's been really more of a mainstay guy who can play some heavy minutes maybe than even the front office and the coaching staff thought.
Arthur, when you consider that Manitoba product Travis Hamonic is under contract long-term, they've just signed Nick Leddy to a 7-year deal. As you mentioned, it's expected that Johnny Boychuk is going to be signed long-term. Those three defensemen, is it pretty clear that Garth Snow has made locking up the core of his D group a priority?
Definitely. And, Calvin DeHaan has signed, I think, for 3 more years beyond this one. And he's a guy who they certainly project mm-hmm. as a top four guy pretty consistently and has played that role quite a bit. I think that's really, it fits in with what they've been trying to do, what Garth Snow has been trying to do for almost a decade now, which is to find these prospects, draft these guys, cultivate them. Get them to the point where they're able to contribute to this team as they've done this year, and make sure that they're part of the group going forward at a cost-effective price. And those three young guys, all under 25, Hamonic, Leddy, and DeHaan, that's going to be a pretty formidable three quarters of a top four going forward in the next few years. I think especially Hamonic has benefited from having Leddy and Boychuk here this year. He's not playing the 25 minutes a night that he played last year, and that was, it started to wear on him quite a bit. The team wasn't as successful, and this year he's had a little bit more help back there. Obviously, carrying those heavy minutes, he's gotten some power play time. He's really been probably their most dynamic defenseman since the All-Star break, and I think it's pretty much because he's a lot fresher than he's been in past years at this time. So having those three guys locked up long-term that are young guys that are going to grow together, that have already proven that they're good NHL defensemen, it's a huge bonus for this team.
Arthur, do you make anything of Larry Brooks' kind of report or alluding to the fact that Johnny Boychuk, there's talk that Johnny Boychuk may want to go play in his hometown of Edmonton after this contract is up?
I've heard some of the same chatter, certainly. Johnny's agents are very tight-lipped. Garth Snow is a guy who's very tight-lipped. Johnny himself always has a smile on his face, but he's about as tight-lipped as it gets. So nobody can really know what's going to happen. I think Elliot Friedman had reported it, I believe, today, and I'd heard some things about that the Islanders have certainly made a big offer to him. The fact that he hasn't accepted, I don't know what that necessarily means, whether he's wanting to wait until July 1 to see what the open market will give him, or whether he's kind of got Edmonton in the back of his mind to go back home and play there. He's got a couple of small kids. I know that they like it on Long Island, but there's almost no one who doesn't like it on Long Island. It's definitely a good place to live and have a family. The move to Brooklyn, whether that's a positive or a negative, it certainly depends on the guy, but he seems to be enjoying himself here, and I think the Islanders certainly, very much unlike last season when Thomas Vanek turned down their giant offer in the middle of the year.
What a blessing.
Yeah, blessing in
disguise. Obviously turned out to be the best thing that ever happened to them, but this is a situation where they don't have to make the hard sell. I think Johnny Boychuk is pretty much well aware of what he'd be giving up if he decides not to stay. So if he wants to win, and he certainly was a winner a lot in Boston, and he wants to win right away at the beginning of this what's sure to be a long-term lucrative deal, then we might see something happen before the end of the season or before the end of the playoffs. But, until then, we have to just wait and see because nobody's saying nothing.
Yeah, there's really no better young team to be a part of right now. And back to Nick Leddy for a second, Arthur, and a guy who we knew can move the puck. He really has looked great on Long Island. How is his, and Joel Quenneville didn't always trust him at times, especially defensively. How has his overall game come along with so much responsibility on his shoulders this year?
I think the style that the Islanders play, obviously it's a style that a lot of teams want to play, that, the fast transition, having guys that can jump up in the rush, guys that are great skaters on the back end, guys like, and Leddy certainly fits that bill. I think they'd love him to be a little bit tougher to in his own zone, kind of in those stationary defensive situations. Mm-hmm. He doesn't play a lot on the penalty kill. That keeps him a little bit fresher. But I think his elusiveness is really what's, enabling him to be good in his own zone. And obviously playing with Boychuk certainly helps quite a bit. But I think they like what he's given them, and I think he's a guy who's willing to learn. And the minutes that he's played are reflective of the fact that he has been very good in his own end. I think his advanced numbers are among the best for a defenseman in the league right now. So if he has the puck or if he's getting it out in transition, that's less he is going to have to stand in front of the net and try to shove big forwards out of the way. So I think they're happy with what he's given them. I think there's room for improvement when. On the defensive end in his own zone, but just evidenced by how much he's played this year and how much responsibility he's been given. I think the coaching staff is very pleased with his all around game.
Our guest on NHL Midweek is Arthur Staple of Newsday Newspaper on Long Island, discussing the New York Islanders. And Arthur, moving away from Nick Leddy for a couple minutes, the Isles are, they're firmly in a playoff spot. That's pretty clear. And a bit of a dogfight as to where they're going to finish in the Metropolitan Division or, maybe even the wild card if the Capitals get on a hot streak and the Isles slow down a little bit. But you look at goaltending, and Yaroslav Halak, who had such a good start to the season, has sort of come back down to earth a little bit over the last month or six weeks or so. Any concerns in the Isles, in the Isles dressing room, among Isles front office, riding Halak and a very strong team into the playoffs, given that he's had some playoff collapses of recent time, especially with St. Louis?
Yeah, I think what he's given them, his numbers are not spectacular, certainly, for a guy who's played as much as he has, and certainly a guy who's won as much as he has. I think that just kind of highlights the firepower this Islander team has. I just think that they have a lot of confidence when he's back there. They're redeveloping their confidence in Chad Johnson as well, who had a very good game the other night against the Coyotes. But obviously Halak is the guy, and you have to go into the playoffs with a clear number one, and he is certainly that. The thing that a lot of the guys that have been here for a little while remember from 2 years ago in the playoffs is that if they'd gotten a couple of more saves against the Penguins, I think they would have pulled that upset. And I think they all feel that way, that they played well enough and they just needed to have a little more confidence that their goaltender was going to make a save or two. And, Halak has not, like you said, he's not been at the top of his game for the last couple of weeks, but he's had some stretches where he's been very dominant. And frankly, he's played his best against teams that they're going to face in the playoffs. He's been lights out, except for the last game against the Rangers. Been very good in the games he's played against the Penguins. So I think that maybe gives them a little bit more confidence that, the rivalry games, the teams that they're probably going to see in the first round, and if they can get past that the second round, that he definitely has upped his game a little bit in the regular season against those teams. So, I think just having that baseline of confidence that they feel like this guy is going to make the save when they need him to make it is going to keep them mentally ahead of where they were a couple years ago, and certainly with their offensive capabilities on this team, they may not need a guy to make 50 saves and shut out an opponent in a Game 6 or a Game 7 because they feel like they can score pretty much against anybody.
Arthur, back on New Year's Eve, Jets fans saw just how much forward depth the Islanders have, Ryan Strome having that big game. Mm-hmm. And when you consider that Anders Lee just got his 20th goal the other night, and Brock Nelson, former UND standout, is having a great year, is it safe to say that, I guess, after especially this contract extension, that the best trade deadline acquisition that the Islanders are going to get is the return of Kyle Okposo?
I would think so. You know, they're a little... They were hurt a lot on defense by injuries earlier in the year when Johnny Boychuk missed a few games. Travis Hamonic was out. Lubo Vishnovsky has kind of been in and out of the lineup. And they made it through there with some depth. The forwards are kind of getting tested right now with Pozo still out. Mikhail Grabowski's out. Casey Zizekas is out. But, you know, you see a guy like Kale Mollerat, who, an Edmonton kid who comes in after 6 years in the minors without even a sniff of the NHL, scores a goal and sets up the go-ahead goal last night against Arizona. This is the kind of season that the Islanders have been having. They call up guys, and they signed a bunch of, AHL, NHL veterans on July 1, and I think their fans kind of threw their hands up thinking, what are we doing again? And now some of these guys like Corey Conacher early in the year, Colin McDonald, who's been with them a couple years, was down for most of the season, came back up. He's got 8 points in 10 games. You get these kind of depth guys who are hungry to get back in, and it can get you through a lot, and it really obviates the need to be hunting around to give up assets and try to find somebody as a rental. It's certainly not been their posture for a long time. So I think they feel like you said, getting Okposo back probably around mid-March, Grabowski hopefully sooner than that, Zizekas probably even sooner than that, to kind of give them the depth again and have their regular 12 guys in the right spots. I think that's what they're looking towards. You never know if something comes up in these next few days, but it certainly doesn't seem like Garth Snow is hunting around to trade away any of his younger prospects or any of the few draft picks they still have left for anything in the short term.
Arthur Staple covers the New York Islanders for Newsday newspaper. He's a frequent guest on this program. Arthur, thanks very much. If the Isles make the long playoff run, it's going to be a very entertaining final season at Nassau Coliseum come this spring.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, guys. Anytime.
Thanks, Arthur. Take care of yourself. Let's head to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
20 minutes past 7 in the evening. Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. This segment of the program is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Fantastic list of comedians upcoming at Rumors. A number of concert series events. Harlan Williams is upcoming early on in March. You got John Doerr. You got Sean Wayans. You name them, they're pretty much, it's a fantastic list of comedians upcoming at Rumors.
Now, Drew, I want to give a quick shout out to Remus for fixing this light here in the studio, this little lamp that, for those who don't know, I always sit in the middle between Drew and Richie, and this lamp has been flickering, like kind of not being on, but flickering on and off.
What flickering means.
Yeah. for about three, I don't want them to get confused with like the Flickr website. So,
that's right.
Remus went out, and I believe Lauren went out actually. Lauren of the station went out and got a light bulb, but then Remus put the light bulb into this little...
No, I didn't. It was Lauren. He did everything. I just told him, said, hey, we need a light bulb, and he got it.
You said you did it.
I never said that.
That's what you said during the break. You
Wow.
Said,
no, never said that.
Taking credit for the big salad, Remus.
I knew you were going there.
I never took
Anyways, I'll thank that. Lauren then when I see him.
Okay.
So basically, Remus did nothing.
He told Lauren.
Someone's got to tell the guy responsible for replacing the light bulb.
I bet you Lauren didn't know he was the guy responsible for replacing the light bulb until you just declared him that.
He didn't.
Okay, let's talk about the Leddy contract, a number of other contracts in the NHL signed really in the last 2 days, 3 days. Your thoughts on the Leddy contract? We talked about it with Arthur. He's on the ground there in Long Island. He sees it all the time. When it came over the wire, I don't know if there is still a wire, but
yeah,
when it came over the wire.
There's definitely a wire.
Okay. When it came over the wire, what were your thoughts on the 7-year, $38.5 million contract?
Drew, I thought it was a solid contract. And Nick Leddy's flaws were kind of outlined by Arthur there, in that, you know, defensively, not always the best, gets pushed around, but not the biggest guy. But he fits in exactly what they want to do. They want to be a puck-moving team, skate the puck through the neutral zone. He can play in offensive situations. He can get the puck up to their speedy forwards. He can join the rush. He signed away a bunch of UFA years.
5 years.
So, I mean, over the course of the contract, would he have probably made that much money? Yeah, probably, maybe even a little bit more. I think it's a fair deal for, you know, a guy who was playing really bottom 2 minutes in Chicago to go into New York, and he was entrusted with more offensive and defensive responsibility, penalty killing notwithstanding. When you're playing top 4 minutes, you're going to be put in more situations. And, you know, I think he's acquitted himself quite well. So I like the contract. I think for the Islanders, as, you know, Arthur mentions, you got him and Hamonic. I like Calvin DeHaan too. We'll see what happens with Boychuk, but you got a young defense that's finally getting up to the par of what the forwards are. And now you're seeing, and they're able to do this contract because of a number of things. First of which, they got Travis Hamonic on this below-market deal of 3.9 a year, I think it is, for the next many years.
That might be, Richie, the most underrated great contract. Because but when you're talking about Travis Hamonic, people forget, you know, obviously he's from Manitoba here, mm-hmm. but I mean, you're talking about a guy who could have been on the Olympic team. People forget he was invited to the Team Canada Olympic camp. He's that good. He's a top 20 defenseman in the league.
3.85 on his deal, and you have him for 5 more years at a cap at a 3.85, 5 more years after this year. Great deal. Yep. Then you have, you know, Nick Leddy slots in at his 5.5 after this season. Calvin DeHaan is going to be at 1.9 on a cap hit. For the next 2 years after that, he's still an RFA. So you look at that. Now, the reason they're able to do that, you know, back to what I was saying before, is you have guys on contracts like Tavares at 5.5, Okposo at 2.8, Franz Nielsen at 2.7, way below market deals on these guys. Now, they're eventually going to get paid and all that stuff, sure. And that allows them to pay Kulaman and Grabowski more than they're really worth. But at the end of the day, I mean, it's nice cap management by Gar Snow, who's been criticized, but I've always, I've really liked his cap management for the past number of years, and now it's paying off because he's able to give these guys money to keep them in the fold. And if he can sign Boychuk, I mean, the Islanders are going to be a threat for many years coming up.
I agree with everything you said, Richie, and I think Garth Snow was criticized because one of his first major moves was signing Rick DiPietro to a 15-year contract, but I think when you look at his recent body of work, I think, Drew, you got to start talking about Garth Snow as executive of the year. I really do. I haven't heard that yet. Yeah. Maybe I'm starting right now. But you acquire Nick Leddy and Johnny Boychuk at the beginning of the year, moves that we talked about with Arthur Staple of Newsday on this show, and you look at how that solidified the weakness of this team, along with goaltending. And he went out and he acquired Yaroslav Halak because Nabokov was not a legitimate NHL goaltender anymore. And you guys know how much I like the Islanders. I think they can go far in the playoffs this year. And you consider that they've got Leddy, Hamonic under contract. Richie mentioned Tavares, Okposo.
Four lines.
And, you know, I'll be honest, Richie, 7 years, I thought it, people forget Nick Leddy's only 23. He's been in the NHL now for a few years, and I think he was very underrated behind guys like Keith, Seabrook, Jalmerson,
Oduya. He was in the Cam Barker trade, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I believe
he was drafted by Minnesota, because he's from Minnesota.
Yes.
Yeah. So, Nick Leddy, great defenseman. You know, I would have thought maybe they'd sign him to 5 years. But the thing is, Drew, if Garth Snow and the Islanders management like what they see from Nick Leddy, they're confident they give him an extra couple years.
Sure.
So, I mean, you can't really fault them. I mean, they pay what you're supposed to pay a defenseman of his ilk. As Richie mentioned, he's better than a fifth or sixth defenseman. He's a top four defenseman.
For sure. And I don't love the 7-year deals or anybody really. But, I mean, in this day and age, the market, all that stuff. Yeah. And you're buying out 5 UFA years, you know.
A couple other signings, two from the Los Angeles Kings. They signed Jordan Nolan. Jordan Nolan and Kyle Clifford. Kyle Clifford gets 5 years and $8 million, which is an average annual value of $1.8 million per season.
Yep.
And Jordan Nolan gets 3 years and $2.85 million, an average annual value of $950,000.
You know, I'll get in here for a second. You might look at Jordan Nolan's numbers, and he doesn't have a lot of points. Of course, I should mention he's the son of Ted Nolan.
Sure.
But if you look at his numbers, I mean, you'd say, okay, well, why are they signing this guy to a 3-year deal? He's actually been a guy that's kind of been in and out of the lineup for the LA Kings. But he's the type of guy that is one of those players that you can confidently throw out there on the fourth line and he finishes his checks. Absolutely. He does those small things. Jordan Nolan is a tough – if you watch the Kings, players like Jordan Nolan and Kyle Clifford are the reason why they're hard to play against. And that goes back to 3 or 4 years ago when Dustin Brown almost won the Conn Smythe Trophy when the Kings won their first cup, really, you know, throwing the body around. Kyle Clifford, a guy that I've talked about on midweek before, he's a guy that can kill penalties. You know, he's got a decent scoring touch, but he's a guy – that most likely plays on the fourth line, sometimes plays on the third line.
Yeah,
but these are guys, and especially Clifford, you know, he's in his late 20s now, but he's a guy that the Kings know what they're getting in him, and he's one of those guys that has those intangibles, Richie. He's not a 20-goal scorer. He's not a 50-point guy. He's a guy, if he, you know, puts in 10 goals, has 30 points, you're pretty happy with him. He's a very hard player to play against. Responsible defensively. So I like those signings because those are those depth pieces.
He's only 24, is he?
Oh, I thought he was a little older.
Yeah.
But
you would think so. Yeah, he looks older.
He's one of those depth pieces hard. that really are a contributing factor to why the Kings have been successful.
I mean, as he nails it on both. I like both contracts are solid. You know what you're getting. They're big boys who are tough to play against. They get on the forecheck. They stand up for their teammates. You're not breaking the bank. You're paying no less than $1 million. Basically saying you can be that 13th guy, 14th guy. We're fine with paying you that. That's almost the minimum anyways. And Clifford, you're paying a little bit more capable of playing in different roles, as he mentioned. And again, team guy. You lock him up for 5 years, but it's such a low cap hit as compared to, you know, yep. It's going to be what's below the National Hockey League average by quite a bit, I think. So at the end of the day, Dean Lombardi and cap management, he's a tremendous cap manager.
It's a pretty big day
for tremendous cap manager. Aside from
Lombardi.
The Mike Richards issue, to be able to keep this team together like he has,
sure,
he's done a nice job.
And we'll talk about the acquisition of Andre Sekera coming up next segment. And before we go to break, I mean, you guys were at the game, obviously, with me last night, and we all saw the great picture
of the
girls going through
that was
chemotherapy.
Awesome.
That was awesome. And kudos to the Jets and the fans and the Stars for everyone giving a round of ovation. Her name's Alex Delaloy, and she's from Neepawa, and she's going to have
Shane Knighty's hometown.
Shane Knighty's hometown, that's right. And she's going to undergo chemotherapy for the next 18 months. What's happening on her sister station on Friday, 103.1 Virgin Radio, for a donation of $103.
Okay.
You can request whatever song you want, and all proceeds are going to be given to Alex and her family as she's in the midst of her fight with chemotherapy. So that's coming up this coming Friday from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Make a donation. You dial 780-WINS, so 204-780-WINS on Friday. Make a donation of $103. You'll get whatever song you want played on 103.1. That'll happen for you, and all proceeds are going to go to Alex and her family. And, of course, we echo and send our support and send our best wishes to Alex in this fight, and we wish her nothing but the best, and her family nothing but the best, and everybody that's going through anything, cancer or any, you know, disease whatsoever, any hardship. Of course, we'll echo our thoughts there as well.
Drew, that was touching. It really was touching part of the game, and it shows you that you know, there's more to life than hockey, and you know, we're all a big fan of hers now.
Yeah, exactly right. So Friday, 6 a.m., 6 p.m., 204-780-WINS. Dig deep, get a song played, make a great donation to help out a brave little girl. Let's head to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
He can skate the puck out of the zone. He can pass it out. Exactly what they lost with Voinov's suspension. And he's a competitor. Daryl Sutter will love this guy. And with the way they're playing in all their different areas, this puts the LA Kings right back as a leading contender for the Stanley Cup.
TSN's Craig Button talking about the Los Angeles Kings acquisition of Andre Sekera earlier today. He goes from Carolina to the Kings in exchange for a 2015 first-round pick. Could be a 2016 first-round pick if the Kings were to not make the playoffs, but I think we all agree that we expect them to be in there.
That sure changed, huh?
Yeah, that changed real quick there. A couple weeks. And along with prospect defenseman Roland McEwen, who's playing for Kingston of the OHL. Welcome back to NHL Midweek. This segment is brought to you by Not Auto Corp. Be sure to visit their beautiful new luxury auto and art gallery at the corner of Waverly and McGilvery. For more information, check them out online at notautocorp.com. So does this acquisition of Sekera, you know, change your ceiling for the Los Angeles Kings?
Well, I don't think it changes the ceiling, Drew, because the ceiling is, I mean, the way that they're playing right now. They were playing slow, kind of like looking like they were tired 2 weeks ago, and just boom. And not necessarily just turn it, well, basically turn it on. I mean, they're not never as bad as they look when they're struggling. Never as probably as good as they look right, you know, as good, not as good as you might think they are right now, but they're better than they were before, put it that way. And their ceiling's always been a team that can beat any team in the league. This just gives them a better chance of doing it. So I think the ceiling is the same, but just the percentage chance of them being more successful is there. This is what they need to round out their defense. And you know, you watch them play against Detroit last night, against a team that can create opportunities, you know, seemingly with all four lines, Ezzy, and LA really didn't give up much at all. I mean, and that's a team game. But if you're looking at their, you know, if you're looking at Matt Green and having to play in your top four, you're looking at a team that needs depth on the back end.
Yep.
So then you put Andre Sekera there, and you push down a guy like Green, and you have Muzzin, Regier, and Doughty, and Sekera. Well, and then you're getting back to what you're good at, and that's depth, and that's being able to have a kind of the depth on the third pairing. That's being able to move the puck on both of your top defense pairings at a high level. And nobody moves it like Drew Doughty, probably. But Sekera does give you that second pairing guy, as Craig Button mentions off the top. And the lead in there, he gives you the guy who moves the puck out of his own zone, like a Voinov. And that's what they need. Their forwards, pretty darn solid. And you know, and the goaltending, Jonathan Quick, looks incredible right now. So if you're the Kings, I don't think you really need to make any other moves. Maybe they go for one more defenseman. But the way they're going right now, and obviously the cap the way it is, I don't see them doing much. Certainly nothing significant. I like this move. If it, as a first-round pick, you know, 2015, if they miss the playoffs, which seems unlikely, or 2016, Kelly Chase said in the first hour, there's windows here.
Mm-hmm.
If you can add a top four D-man who moves a puck, what you need, you got to do it. And I like the move.
Yeah, we were talking about this off-air. I don't think that there's one team in the Western Conference, at the top of the Western Conference right now, Drew, that wants to play the LA Kings. They've won 7 in a row, and you know, you look at that defense.
8 in a row.
8 in a row now, yeah. Sorry, with the win against Detroit last night. It was late last night. I think I fell asleep during it. Caught a little bit of it after the Jets game. Slava Voynov was a huge part of the last two cup-winning teams.
Absolutely.
And you have to give up a first-round pick and one of your prospects to go get Andre Sekera, mm-hmm. Richie, but it's a good move by Dean Lombardi, because that was clearly the weakness of your team. And you look at, you know, Richie mentions, you know, they might go out and acquire a defenseman, really, to replace Willie Mitchell. Mm-hmm. So another veteran defenseman is what Richie's saying they might acquire. Obviously, Willie Mitchell's don't grow on trees. He's a good defenseman, and
yes.
Florida's glad they signed him. He's the captain now. You could always call up Mike Richards from the AHL. I'm not saying that they're going to do it, but you always have that option before the playoffs, mm-hmm. to call him up. Plus, you got Tanner Pearson coming back from an injury,
mm-hmm.
I believe, 2 weeks from now, roughly 2 or 3 weeks from now. So you have those two options. So if you're the LA Kings right now, you know, you're pretty happy with the way your season has quickly turned around, because a month ago, as you mentioned, Drew, we were talking about the LA Kings going from Stanley Cup champs to possibly missing the playoffs. So now you're Dean Lombardi, you're laughing, and well, maybe not laughing,
yeah,
but you've got a smile on your face.
You're feeling pretty good right now.
The West is wide open right now, especially with Patrick Kane being out until at least the Western Conference Finals.
That's a huge loss, because I think Patrick Kane, Richie, this year was probably playing his best hockey ever and was in the Hart Trophy discussion.
Probably, and the truth is they beat Chicago in 7 games last year anyways. So,
right.
I mean, sure, it's obviously a factor, Drew, but they're looking at Anaheim right now, and kind of Anaheim's leaking a bit. Nobody else in that division is really that good.
No, if they played Vancouver in the first round, it's 4 or 5 games, I'd suspect, given where both teams are right now.
I would peg it probably at a 5-game series. I mean, Anaheim took them to 7 last year and had a terrible game 7, so that would be a war.
Sure.
But there's certainly no team in the West. Or frankly, there's no team in the league that LA doesn't think they could beat.
Especially now that they're clicking at their you know,
I probably didn't think
they never
thought that before anyways. But that's especially right. Now, and you give them a nice boost in the back end.
You win 8 games in a row. It gives you a lot of confidence in addition to everything else.
You know what? Also, I like about that, Drew. You had a guy in there who's never won before.
Sure, hungry.
You give him some new hunger, yeah.
Yeah. Winnick Watch 2015 is mercifully now over.
I can't. Wow. I'm so upset. I was loving Winnick Watch.
Really?
Yeah, it was great. I woke up every day. Where's Daniel Winnick going to go?
Where's third line left winger going
to
go?
He's traded to the Pittsburgh Penguins in exchange for center Zach Sill, a second round pick in 2016 and a fourth round pick in 2015.
If you remember, Drew, when the Penguins were in town,
mm-hmm.
Jacob Trouba fought Zach Sill. Remember Zach Sill in front of the net there?
Yeah, I do. That was Trouba's first
Jets
fight
fans
in the
will
NHL,
remember.
Or?
That's who Zach Sill is. I mean, he's a guy that was playing mainly on the fourth line of the Pittsburgh Penguins. But, hey, yeah, look at Richie. The Penguins brought in Steve Downey, and they've brought in Daniel Winnick because, obviously, he's the type of guy that you put on your third line. He's big. He can play on the penalty kill. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a depth acquisition. To me, the biggest move the Penguins made was grabbing David Perron from the Oilers for a first-round pick and Rob Klinkhammer. I really like that move. He obviously replaces Pascal Dupuis there with Crosby. You know, just to put this in perspective, though, Drew, I know this isn't necessarily on Winnick, but Sidney Crosby's got to get it going in order for this team to get back to where they were in 2009 when they won the Cup. I realize that grabbing Perron from the Oilers and getting Daniel Winnick, that's fine. But to me, they still need a defenseman.
Well, that's the thing, Ezzy, on that point. You know, I've always thought that. Their defense is just not good enough. I mean, the East is wide open, so I'm not going to say not good enough to make a run through there. But if they really want to beat a team like L.A. or St. Louis, whatever it may be, Chicago, whoever it may be, Anaheim, Nashville, all those teams, and obviously get through the East even, and there are some very good teams in East Tampa and all those teams, you have to me, have one more guy who can play in your top four, and you've traded draft picks now. So what are you trading, unless it's a young defense prospect?
Which
they do have.
Yeah.
Although they've had him for a long time. I mean, when are they going to play already? I know Pouliot's in the lineup
Derek
now.
Pouliot, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah. Scott Harrington, he's been around
for a while.
That's
what's going to have to be to get the guy who can play now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not talking about a Keith Yandel type.
You're talking about
Zibanejad Mihajlović's injury now. They've had him before. He didn't really work the way they want to play, and they play a pretty offensive style now, too. I don't know if he's the guy. But there's it needs to be a kind of a solid stay-at-home, a solid two-way defenseman. Doesn't need to kill it offensively, but needs to be able to play. And, you wonder if they look cross-state for a guy like a Braden Coburn, something like that. I don't know. But I think they have to add one more guy. As you mentioned, you trade draft picks for Perron, first-rounder. You trade second-rounder here. And Jimmy Rutherford wants to go for it. I understand that. Again, back to Kelly Chase's comment about windows. But can you match up enough defensively with the guys you have right now?
Did they pay too much for Winnick?
Well, I mean, again, back to windows. This team is harder to play against than they were before.
Yep.
You have LaPierre. You have Downey.
Yep.
You had Winnick now. And well, you
Perron's
can also
not easy to play against either.
Yeah, and the thing about Winnick that helps you is, you want to play your best players in the situations they can help you most. Power play, even strength. You want to be able to save it up. They're not playing Crosby as much as Dan Bylsma was before. They're saving him up. So I think Ezzy part of that saving up for the playoffs.
He's averaging less than 20 minutes a game.
Yeah, now he is. Wait till April.
Well, of course, he'll be up to 30 minutes a game.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and there's some depth in the roster on their lineup now. And you obviously had two guys in there for James Neal and a guy like Nick Spaulding. And you can push Brandon Sutter down. So forward, they look good. I know Fleury struggled in the playoffs, but I still think Fleury's a good goaltender. But that defenseman.
Yeah.
Because if you're already, you can't be half pregnant here. You got to add that defenseman.
Minnesota, they acquired Sean Bergenheim. We talked about it sort of off
show. Just to sort of cut you off, but why can't you be half pregnant? Isn't that like halfway through the pregnancy? Like, why can't you be?
No, you're just pregnant. You're halfway through your pregnancy, but you are pregnant. There's no such thing as half pregnant. You're halfway to giving birth.
Yeah.
You're fully pregnant.
Okay, I just never... Some of these sayings I don't really get, but...
Yeah, well, it's probably a lot of things that you don't really get. Bergenheim to Minnesota. Your thoughts on that acquisition? We talked about it sort of as it related to the Jets having to go out and make a move earlier.
He helps your top nine. He's your top nine kind of guy, Drew. Do you really want him in your top six? No, you want him on your third line. You can trust him in defensive situations. He can add in some offense. I thought Chuck Fletcher just anteed up before the other guys did, and beat the rush, I think. I think he caused the trades today.
Sure.
And Chuck Fletcher, better to be ahead usually than following. I thought Cheval Dayoff and Jim Rutherford were following today, and Chuck Fletcher beat them to the punch.
Yeah, I think that acquisition has a little bit to do with the fact Jason Zucker's out for the season.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're looking at the wing, and they're looking at Zucker, who was having a really good year, scoring a lot of goals. They're looking at replacing that goal scoring. And, you know, the Minnesota Wild right now are one of those teams fighting with the Jets and fighting with a bunch of other teams for that last couple of wild card spots in the Western Conference. Again, you know, Bergenheim, you know, we talked about this for a couple weeks.
No Cook, too.
No Cook.
And he helps defensively.
No, I'm not a big Bergenheim fan. I mean, the guy has some goal-scoring ability, but to me, one-dimensional, you know, similar a little bit to Toulouse. And I don't mean to sound like I'm, you know, being negative towards these acquisitions, but I look at a guy like Bergenheim, another pending UFA. You know, I don't know necessarily that he makes the team that much better. I think he gives you a little bit of goal scoring, but again, to me, a guy that throughout his career, you look at his stats and you know, talk to people who've watched Bergenheim play. He's been very inconsistent, but I can understand why they made the move.
He played defensively. I mean, they have a lot of guys who are offensive. As he can add in some offense, which you need, but you need him to be able to play in defensive situations. And you have had the losses of depth, as you mentioned, on the wing.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And the final one, the Canadiens acquired Devontae Smith-Pelly from Anaheim in exchange for Jiří Sekáč. And this is a much different trade than normal.
Let's do that after the break, because that one you need to get into a little bit more than when we have these.
That's a player-for-player trade.
Then let's do that after the break.
We'll see those very often,
We'll take one final commercial break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
One final segment Wednesday evening here on TSN 1290. A reminder, Saturday, 12 noon, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show will get you ready for the Jets and the Kings. And we're also going to conduct our annual NHL trade deadline preview special. So that's going to be Saturday on the show. Monday, we wrap up the NHL trade deadline with a special edition, a special Monday edition of NHL Midweek. And then, of course, next Wednesday, there is no show because we're going to be at the Jets and the Senators, which you can hear on TSN 1290. So Saturday, the preview show. Monday, special edition of NHL Midweek.
So Saturday, we're going to talk about what 29 teams are going to be after Dion Phaneuf.
That could very well be something to discuss. Quick look at the out-of-town scoreboard as it relates to Winnipeg Jets and the games of their interest in New Jersey. The Devils lead the Flames 1-0. Halfway through the second period.
All the Devils are doing right now is playing themselves out of the McDavid-Eichel sweepstakes. They've been playing really well lately, but the problem is instead of getting a fourth or fifth overall pick, they're going to get an eighth or ninth overall pick.
That's very true there, Ezzy. So let's talk about the Devontae Smith-Pelly, Jiří Sekáč trade. Sekáč goes from Montreal to Anaheim. Devontae Smith-Pelly goes from Anaheim to Montreal. Both young players, 22, 23 years old, both under reasonable contracts.
We talk about relationships that Mark Bergevin and Bob Murray used to room together. So talking about Chevalier and relationships, this also would be a relationship kind of trade. Not the sole reason, of course, but probably one of the reasons why there's a comfort there.
Like separate rooms or bunk beds?
I think the same room, separate beds.
Anyways, your thoughts on this trade. Is this one of those deals where both teams sort of saw a weakness and an ability to fill it? Or
how
did this one come about?
I think it's opportunity, Rich.
You know, I think both teams saw a skill that they had in the player that they traded that they had on the roster anyways. And so in Devontae Smith-Pelly, he's strong along the boards. You know, he can kill penalties. He's a big guy. He can be physical. And I don't know a ton about his game. That's just what I've read about him, so I can't speak personally about his skill level. But that's what I've heard in terms of how he plays. And, you know, Anaheim has quite a bit of that. They want to add skill, especially on the wings. And we talked about that. Didn't we talk about that on Saturday's show, adding skill on the wings?
Mm-hmm.
At least adding something on the wings. And I think what they do here now is they add a guy like Sekáč, who's, again, I've seen plays sporadically, so can't really speak to his game, but I know his game is what he's known for is kind of a skill game, speed. He can play left and right, but I think Anaheim's going to play him on the left side. So Anaheim's trading size for speed. And what's Montreal? And what do they have? They have an abundance of size. They need speed. What does Montreal have? An abundance of speed. They need size. A good old hockey trade.
You know, just exactly. It's a good old hockey trade. And you know, Richie, as far as the size goes, I think, you know, Sekáč and Smith-Pelly, it's not just the height. What Richie's talking about, too, there, it's the physicality.
Yeah.
And Smith-Pelly,
that's right.
I've watched Smith-Pelly quite a bit over the years. And last year, he came in and played with the Ducks in the playoffs and was pretty darn good, had some goals.
I believe, what was it, 12 goals?
Did he have 12?
No, pardon me. I had it right here.
Say five or six. I don't have it in front of me, but he's played
five goals in 12 postseason games last year. Sorry,
not bad. So
he's an up and down kind of guy.
Yeah, he is.
And I mean, like, the way he plays, not it's not his like production.
No, exactly.
You're talking north south.
No, but Devontae Smith-Pelly, Drew, is a guy that's been called up and down from Norfolk of the AHL, and
trying to confuse people now with the up and down.
Yeah, exactly. No, but two guys. Sekhach is obviously a rookie in the NHL. He's a guy that was widely considered one of those best players outside of the NHL, and a lot of teams were after him. But when I said opportunity before Richie, was talking there, to me, Sekhach is buried a little bit, out of the top six there in Montreal.
He'd been a healthy scratch for the twice in the last week.
Yeah, and obviously Galchenyuk and Gallagher. You know, there's other guys in front of him on the depth chart. Same thing with Smith-Pelly. But to me, you know, Richie makes a good point. Montreal wants more physicality, so they get that with Smith-Pelly. Smith-Pelly can score too.
Sure.
He's also a guy that'll, you know, get in there and throw his body around. You know, very similar to an Evander Kane as well. And I'm not saying he's as good as Evander Kane, but Smith-Pelly's a good player. And he's a guy that, you know, they can afford to trade because, you know, you have other guys in the lineup that can step in. But Sekhach, you know, right now with the Bolesky injury, you've got Patrick Maroon playing there. Sekhach, to me, is a guy you might see
him play. He's better than Patrick Maroon.
Exactly. And you might see him play with Getzlaff and Perry. He might play on the third line.
Yep.
But, you know, it's kind of one of those trades where they say, okay, well, Sekhach can help us out with the speed game, can play with Getzlaff, and then Smith-Pelly for Montreal, he's a guy that he can score, but he can also, you know, bump and grind a little bit. So I like the trade for both teams. I like both of those players. I think Montreal fans are really going to like Smith-Pelly.
A lot of familiarity between Smith-Pelly and some of the Canadians players. He played World Juniors with Nathan Beaulieu, Brendan Gallagher, and Michael Bourneval.
Yeah, and he's good buddies with P.K. Subban's brother, too. So, I mean, there's a lot of ties there in terms of familiarity. Canadian boy coming to play in Montreal. So, I mean, there's a lot of appeal there. And I, again, guys, you're adding size, which is a need.
Yep.
And you can afford to create some speed on a guy in and out of your lineup. But Anaheim adds skill here. Not that Smith-Pelly doesn't have skill, but he adds skill. And to Ezzy's point, you know, I like Matt Bolesky, but he's a pending UFA too, right? So, you know, Bolesky,
also injured.
Yeah, of course. And then and how's he going to play and where's he going to play? Bolesky has played with Kessler and he has played with Getzlaff. Depending on who you're playing against, it's always a matchup game. Giving yourself flexibility helps. And I like this move for both teams, actually. I think
it's rare that you can
needs.
Say that.
Yeah.
Let's look at a couple of the injuries from around the NHL because it was a really bad week for big injuries.
Terrible.
Patrick Kane, obviously, 12 weeks with the broken clavicle. He had surgery earlier today. So he's out of the Blackhawks lineup at least until after the second round of the playoffs.
You know, just quickly, Richie, that's devastating. He looks like he'll be out at least 6 to 8 weeks and probably more.
And they say it was worse than they expected because I think initially
he had surgery already.
Yeah, I don't think they expected he was going to necessarily need surgery. A full recovery, they say, will take approximately 12 weeks. I know that they always overestimate and then, you know, have him come back sooner, but, you know,
it's devastating, Drew, but this team is not going to go into a downside, in my opinion. I mean, you've got so much depth there. They called up Teuvo Teravainen. Obviously, he's having a little bit of struggles in his rookie season. But you've got Marian Hossa there, Patrick Sharp, Jonathan Toews.
Sharp has struggled, and Hossa has not had a great year either.
But I'm just saying, the amount of depth that they have that other teams don't have, it's not going to affect them as much. But when you take out a guy who's a point-a-game player, above a point-a-game, you don't replace that. But, I mean, this is a team that, you know, is still very deep. I know what you're saying, Richie. Hossa struggled, and Sharp hasn't had, you know, maybe the year that he did a couple years ago. But it's still, they can get through this. They'll still be a top team in the West.
And the other key here is he's on long-term injury reserve, which opens up a lot of money for them to make a move. And they will 100% make a move.
Sure.
And hopefully on Monday.
Curtis Glencross is one guy that they've talked about possibly going there.
I mean, there are other guys.
Hopefully on Monday because you're selfish, right?
Yeah, well, you know, we need some content, right?
You'll be on with Rick on Monday from 11 to 3, of course, before you rejoin us at 6 o'clock. Get back to slumming it with us for the special edition of NHL Midweek. Can they get past the Blues, though, in the first round? I mean, it looks like these
two
teams are going to play each other.
Well, we don't know who they're going to have, Drew. It's premature to ask that question.
If it's Curtis Glencross that they add, I mean, Curtis Glencross make them better than the St. Louis Blues?
He makes them better.
Yeah.
Maybe not. He's not the Curtis Glencross of 4 years ago, at least the way he's playing as of late. I know he's been injured and said that stuff this year. it's still a very tight series. I mean, St. Louis's goaltending would concern me, and I like St. Louis's game. I have to see if Chicago also adds a bottom two defender, because if they don't add a bottom two defender, they're not going to be able to make a long run, I don't think, because Quenneville's not going to trust anybody out of the top four to play enough, and he's going to be run into trouble against a three-line, four-line team like St. Louis. So if Chicago has a winger and a defender, I think they have a, it's probably a coin flip series. If they don't add a defender, and I think they will, then St. Louis would be the favorite for me for sure.
You still have Jonathan Toews, arguably the best two-way forward in the league. You have Duncan Keith, a former Norris Trophy winner. So, I mean, they'll be fine.
Lots more to come as on Saturday as we preview the NHL trade deadline, and then again on Monday with the special edition of the program. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Royal Sports, and Not Auto Corp. Big thank you to our guests tonight from the Carolina Hurricanes, John Forslund, Kelly Chase from the St. Louis Blues, and Arthur Staple from Newsday Newspaper. Great guest tonight. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website with your latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Remus and Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Until Saturday at 12 noon, we wish you a good night and good luck.
You've been listening to
NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.